Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We come to you 7 days a week to help you improve your American English skills. We do this while telling you about interesting and important events happening around the world. We always speak slowly, so we are easier to understand. And we use words that you probably already know. This makes learning English a lot easier. We hope you will use a computer to print the words we say and save the audio as a podcast. By doing that, you can listen again and again and read along. We urge you to start slowly and say the words out loud. Try to pronounce each word the way we say it. Soon, you'll be speaking English in the American way. Okay, if you are ready, let's get started with today's program. A group of conservationists are breeding lions in the southern African nation of Zimbabwe. The wildlife experts hope to increase the lion population to keep the great cats from disappearing. In some areas, lions and human beings are competing for control of land. Researchers believe something must be done quickly to save the animals. Today, we take you to the Antelope Park Farm in Gowero, Zimbabwe. The main business here is lion breeding. The African Lion and Environmental Research Trust has more than 100 lions in its breeding program. The trust is known by the name Alert. Gary Jones heads the Antelope Park Farm. He says Alert has become involved because of a sharp drop in the number of lions. His group believes this has been caused mostly by humans. There are more people moving to this area every year. The lions have less land on which to live.
The wild population of lion has plummeted from about 250 to 260,000 35 years ago to a current estimate ranging between 18 and 30 or 32,000. So you can see the numbers have declined horribly. It comes through human population growth. So the future for the lion is actually looking very bleak at the moment as humans encroach into their natural environment as our population expands.
Antelope Park Farm is one of two sites Alert operates in Zimbabwe. Another area is in Zambia. Gary Jones says the decrease in the lion population affects the whole environment. He adds that other African nations are also seeing the disastrous effects of this.
There are countries, particularly in Central and North Africa, where the lion population has reached a critical level. Burundi, for instance, do not have any lions whatsoever in their national parks. They're very, very desperate to have lions reintroduced back into their national parks, because you take the apex predator out of the equation and suddenly you get all funny things happening with the balance of nature. You get overstocking of these prey species. You get disease coming through into these populations of prey species. That's exactly what's happening in Burundi.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says wild animals are threatened when farmers try to protect their plants or animals. Renee Zudick works for the UN agency. Mr. Zudick is the FAO official responsible for wildlife and forestry in southern Africa. He says his organization has come up with a human wildlife toolkit that some countries are using to reduce conflict between humans and wildlife.
So then we are trying to explain to the people what is the behavior of lions, how do they act. So it's a kind of, you know, building capacity of people to assess the situation, land use planning, not to put their fields just on a pathway of elephants or a corridor. In fact, the Human Wildlife Toolkit is a kind of instrument that the extension workers can use with the communities, explain to them behavior of wildlife, then show them what are the risky behaviors, how they should, you know, plan for their fields.
By providing information, the FAO hopes the conflict between humans and wildlife can be reduced and that the threatened species can grow again. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The United States Capitol Dome, just outside my window in Washington, D.C., is recognized around the world as a symbol of the U.S. government. Since last November, the dome has been surrounded by metal poles or scaffolding and heavy cloth as part of a repair project. Katie Weaver explains what this is all about.
The last major repair work on the U.S. Capitol took place in 1960. Since then, the dome has become weathered and worn. The architect of the Capitol Group reports the dome has more than 1,000 narrow breaks on its surface and other damage. The dome was completed around 1863. U.S. Senate historian Don Ritchie says the dome's cast iron frame is at special risk of weathering.
The Capitol Dome, being cast iron, has been hit by lightning countless times, and so the current construction is to repair the leaks, to fill the cracks, to take off excess layers of paint.
Workers are removing old paint. They covered a large part of the building in plastic and a special cloth to protect workers from the wind and other elements. Much of the work is done at night when lawmakers are not in the building. Some recent visitors to the Capitol were unhappy about its current appearance. They had hoped to get a picture of the usually shining dome. Joyce, a visitor from China, said the sight of the Capitol building left her disappointed.
It was dramatic. It's very fantastic. It's all white. But when I come here today, it's under construction, so my family can't see it clearly. It's kind of disappointed.
Others were more understanding of the repairs. Rick Jones, another visitor, said he was not upset to see the repairs because it will be better in the future.
It's a little inconvenient for us not to see the dome, but you have to think about the future and the people who could be coming to this place for centuries, and, you know, it just needs to be preventive maintenance. I'm not upset with that at all.
The project is expected to take more than 2 years to complete. The dome should be ready for the inauguration of a new president in January 2017. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder. Thank you for listening to As It Is from Learning English, a part of the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. In January, the Pew Research Center published a public opinion study that showed more than 60% of Americans support the renewal of full diplomatic relations with Cuba. In December, President Obama announced he had decided that the two nations should officially recognize one another. It was the first step towards ending a trade embargo that had been in place since the 1960s. In January, during his State of the Union speech, the president called on Congress to begin the work of ending the embargo. Some state and federal lawmakers strongly support the proposal. Others strongly oppose it. Many American farmers and agriculture organizations want the trade embargo to end. Then they could sell more of their crops to Cuba more easily. Cuba imports about 80% of its food. Thomas Martin is a farmer in the Central American state of Illinois. He says ending the embargo could increase his profits by 15%. He will plant his crops in the next few months. He says he grows a lot of special corn, including non-GMO. He says almost all of the product goes to export markets. Mr. Martin says his father could not have imagined ever selling his crops to Cuba. He said the embargo was in place the entire time his father and his father's brothers were farming. Mr. Martin is part of a group of farmers and business leaders pressuring lawmakers to support the end of the trade embargo. People in Cuba were eating from crops grown in Illinois even before Mr. Obama said he would end the embargo. Mark Albertson is a director of market development at the Illinois Soybean Association. He says the Trade Sanctions and Reform Act under former President Bill Clinton permitted agricultural trade to Cuba. But he says there were a lot of difficulties still. One of the difficulties is that it is illegal for the United States to permit Cuba to make payments over time for a shipment of food. This means Cuba must pay the complete amount owed for the food when it is sent. Mr. Albertson says other countries give financial credit to Cuba, making them more competitive than American farmers. He says there has been a sharp drop in agriculture-related exports to Cuba in recent years. The business group U.S. Agricultural Coalition for Cuba is leading a group of about 75 farmers and businessmen.